Before we get started, a trigger warning that in this episode discusses eating disorders, miscarriage, and self-harm. If you or anyone else needs support, 24-hour free counselling is available from Lifeline by phoning 13 11 14. Welcome to Life with Danny Duncan, where we talk about everything from nutrition, movement, and mindset to the bullshit that's been holding you back to live your best life, completely raw and unfiltered. I'm your host, Danny Duncan. I'm a featured nutrition and fitness coach, author, business owner, speaker, mum of three, including twins, and I'm going to let you into the behind the scenes of my life. Oh, and we'll have a bit of a laugh along the way, don't worry. It won't all be serious. I'm going to be the one to make you get uncomfortable with your reality and challenge you to make changes for good. So if you're feeling stuck in where you are in life and are ready to change, this podcast will unpack the reasons why you may be feeling this way and help you with tools to make changes in your life. There's no bullshit here, just real talk. So if you're ready, let's dive in. There's no time like the present. Hello and welcome to my brand new podcast, Life with Danny Duncan. I am so excited to have you here. So thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come and listen to me. This podcast has been in a long time coming. I've been thinking about it for ages. And if you follow me on socials, you already know I love to talk. So this is just a perfect platform for me to express all the ideas and things I love to say. So I thought for this first episode, it would be really awesome for me to get to know you guys and for you to get to know me. So I thought I would tell you a little bit about me, my story, my background, where I've come from, the beliefs behind what I do, what I've learned along the way, and why I wanted to start a podcast and why I love being a fitness nutrition coach and discussing a range of topics. You're going to hear things from fitness tips, nutrition tips. I'm going to have guest speakers on discussing why we act the way we act, why we do the things we do, and any other topics that you want to see, please make sure you let me know. There's also going to be a section on my top tips, as well as a section with me and Chris discussing our relationship, where we came from, our parenting styles, and just life in general for a bit of fun. You might laugh, you might cry, hopefully you do a bit of both, but I hope at the end of the day, I inspire you to make positive changes in your life and realize that life really is beautiful. So here we are, Life with Danny Duncan. Okay, so where to start? Well, I suppose at the beginning. I mean, right back at the beginning, I was born in Christchurch, New Zealand in 1985 in August. I'm a Leo baby and I'm a Leo through and through. So I was born in New Zealand. My dad was in the army. So at the age of four, we moved to Australia and we moved to Canberra, a very small city here in Australia, if you're not from Australia. I have an older brother and an older sister, and I also have a younger sister, Antonia, who is 2 years younger than me. So we grew up in Canberra and we grew up doing a lot of ballet. We loved our ballet and we loved our dancing, and that was basically our life. We went to school and most afternoons we went to ballet. We were always very active. We both played some sport. I played hockey. We did skiing, athletics, swimming, all of the things. So we've always been really, really active. As our teen years went on, we both got quite interested in dancing, and at the age of 15, I got accepted into the Australian Ballet School's inaugural Level 5 program. Before then, they'd had a Level 6 program to 8, and this is the first year that they'd introduced a Level 5 program, and I got accepted. So the next year, at age 15 and a half, packed my bags, my parents drove me down to Melbourne from Canberra, and the first place I went was actually a hostel. I hated that hostel, so within a few weeks, I moved actually into an apartment with one of the other dancers. But I was by myself in Melbourne in the big smoke. Now, prior to going to Melbourne, I'd been to an all-girls private school. So I'm not sure if any of you went to an all-girls private school and did a lot of extracurricular activities, but there was never any interaction with guys. I'm talking nothing. Also, whilst in Canberra at school, my mum always packed my lunches. My mum always made my dinners. My mum always helped me with my breakfast. I mean, I think I made my breakfast, but you get the gist. Our days were pretty much regimented, right? We got up, had breakfast, went to school, got picked up, went to ballet, lunches packed, dinners packed, and that's how it kind of went. I didn't really go to parties. I didn't hang out with my friends a huge amount. Ballet was kind of my life. So you can imagine when I get to Melbourne at age 15 and a half, surrounded by boys, I was like, okay, what is going on here? Anyway, I get there and I am a normal 15 and a half year old girl. I just got my period about a year before. I was pretty flat chested and I was pretty lean. You know, we did a lot of activity and mum was a doctor. So she, you know, she fed us pretty well, nice, healthy stuff. And obviously for ballet, being lean is super important. Anyway, so we get to the Australian Ballet School. I settle in and I have to fend for myself. I have to cook for myself. I have to go shopping for myself. Prior to that as well, alcohol hadn't been a thing. I probably had a couple of sips of wine at my mum and dad's like parties at times. But apart from that, I'd never been drunk. I'd never, you know, gotten drunk or anything. I mean, I was 15 and a half. I'm not sure what it is like these days, but back then, no one was really getting that drunk at 15. Anyway, so we went to ballet school, we do our classes, we do some of our schooling at the VCA, Victorian College of the Arts, across the road. And on weekends, there were parties. And so I think it was within the first couple of weeks, I went to my first party. And yes, you can imagine, I got drunk for the first time off some passion pop. How good was that stuff? It was like $2 or $1.95 a bottle back then. I'm talking what? I'm 38 now. So 23 years ago. And I remember being in the Botanical Gardens drunk, kissing some guy, and literally I'm off my face in probably like half a bottle of passion pop. Anyway, so this life had started where on the weekends we were having parties with all the dancers, because a lot of the dancers had come from interstate. So we all were in apartments by ourselves, all these 15, 16, and 17 year olds rocking in apartments without our parents. I mean, what could go wrong? Now, with alcohol consumption and a 15-year-old buying her own food and having McFlurries when she wants, biscuits when she wants, whatever, I started to put on some weight. Not only that, as I approached closer to 16, things started to change in my body. So not only was I putting on weight, but my boobs started to grow. And by the age of about 16 and a half, I actually had a size D boob. I know, looking at me now, you'd be like, where did they go? And seriously, I don't actually know. But at the time, I put on all this weight. I mean, I say all this weight. We got weighed once a month at the ballet school. I think when I entered the ballet school, I was like 47 kilos. And I haven't grown since then, by the way. And I think at the time of this particular weigh-in, I think I weighed in at 51 kilos. Just so you guys know, at 51 kilos, I'm currently about 56 kilos. So 51 kilos at my height is pretty freaking lean. Anyway, we were getting weighed in this particular day and I weighed in at 51 kilos. And the next thing they did was pull me into a room and called my parents. So you can imagine a 16-year-old vulnerable brain. They called my parents and they said, Danny needs to lose 3 kilos. And I can't really remember my mom's reaction, but I just remember the phone call. And I remember thinking, I have to lose 3 kilos. Like, how do you lose 3 kilos? The only way I knew how to lose 3 kilos at age 16 was to stop eating. That's what all the other girls are doing, throwing up your food, taking laxatives. That's what I feel like I had to do. So this is what started, I suppose, a terrible relationship, not only with food, but with my body image, as you can imagine. Did I comply? No. Am I one to comply? If you know me, I am actually not really one to follow the rules, believe it or not. Sometimes I think I am. And then there are times when I'm just happy to step outside that comfort zone and that zone of rules and do my own thing. So although I knew what I was supposed to do and I did it in per se, I, you know, stopped eating for a little bit, but then I'd go and get drunk and then have McDonald's because I was hungover or drunk. So it was a really terrible cycle of binge eating, restrict and binge, and then not even understanding what my body needed to thrive, especially as a young dancer, and really being influenced by, unfortunately, the adults that were supposed to be looking after us. So my time at the ballet school was a lot of trying to decide who I was and where I fit in. You know, when I was in Canberra, I didn't really fit in. I was at school. I didn't have a huge amount of friends. I got bullied a bit, left out, and I really couldn't be bothered with it. And so I'd found a group of friends in Melbourne that made me feel inclusive, that made me feel like I had friends, that made me feel good about myself. And so we hung out and we went to parties. And as I put on weight and as my boobs grew, I then got pulled into the room once again to be told that my boobs were too big to be a ballet dancer. And if I wanted any shot of being a ballet dancer, I would get a breast reduction. I remember when they told me this as well, my mum was in the room. And like, my mum's not a swearer. My mum actually doesn't get angry. But I remember her reaction wasn't positive. It definitely was not, yeah, of course we're going to get one. They even pulled a girl from the company down to the studio to show me how good I would look if I got a breast reduction. Anyway, thinking back, how damaging. And if that was my daughter, I can tell you right now, there would have been a lot of swear words and I would have pulled her straight out of that school. Anyway, we weren't going to get a breast reduction. And mum and I remember talking about other dancers that definitely had boobs and it was actually okay. And I was only 16, you know, it wasn't going to be like this way forever. But immediately I felt like boobs were a bad thing. Like, who wanted boobs? And then of course, if you think about it, I had this push-pull. The ballet school didn't want me having boobs. Boobs wasn't great if I wanted to be a ballet dancer. My whole career was around my body image and that wasn't going to be okay. But I had all these boys interested in me and liking my body because guys like boobs. And I was getting a lot of attention from that side. So it was a real, you know, mindfuck really in that time of my life. And it really stuffed with my mental health around my body image, relationship with food, and relationship with myself. You know, I felt that I had to look good to be worthy of things. I felt like my body defined who I was. You know, it didn't matter how smart I was or funny I was. My body was defining who I was as a person. And, you know, that still raises its head sometimes, even in my late 30s. So yeah, the damage was done, unfortunately, back then. by the end of my second year at the ballet school, they pulled me into a room and they said, we don't think this is the place for you. We don't think you're going to be a ballet dancer. And one of the teachers actually said, we think you should be a model. Imagine being told that. Like, you can't actually do the skillful thing we want you to do, so you can go be a model. I was like, I don't want to be a model. I wanted to dance. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to dance. I loved expressing myself. Dance was where I felt safe. I felt like I could express, you know, different emotions. I felt like I could be my own person when I was dancing. I wanted to dance. I didn't want to be a model. During that time at school as well, unfortunately, I did a couple of stupid things because I was craving attention. I wanted to be seen for someone else. So a few times I remember taking multiple packets of different kind of drugs. So anti-inflammatory drugs, Nurofen Plus, Panadol, just trying to crave attention. You know, I passed out one day because I took too much anti-inflammatories. You know, I was really craving attention and I wasn't getting it from anywhere. Looking back, it was really harmful, that place. And one reason, I suppose, why I don't want my kids doing ballet, even though potentially it may have changed now, my feelings towards that industry just is tainted, unfortunately. And it's a shame because throughout my whole life until that point, I'd put ballet on this high pedestal of fame and beauty and exquisite lines and music and emotion. And every time I looked at, saw the ballet, and it elicited so much emotion with me. And when I watch the ballet now, I don't see that anymore and I don't feel that anymore. And it's interesting. So I left the ballet school at the end of level 6 when I was 16 and a half. And then I got into the Queensland Dance School of Excellence. I went up there the next year up in Brisbane. Was I 17 then? I was 17 then. Yeah. And I just didn't feel challenged at the QDSE. I didn't feel challenged at all. So then changed dance schools to another dance school up there where I felt that I could just do my thing. I felt like I could dance. I did my education via distance education. So I did English and maths and I could do year 12 and I could dance and I could do what I wanted to do. And I felt included and I felt seen and I felt loved for being me. Unfortunately, I was still throwing up some food, being stupid, not understanding what my body wanted. Like, I just wanted stuff that tasted good, but the stuff that tasted good made me get fat. So I would throw up in the knowledge that if I didn't have it in my body, then maybe I wouldn't put on the weight. I quite liked my time up there in Brisbane and I did a couple of exams up there and did exceptionally well. I felt strong. I felt like I was growing up and I felt respected up there as well. After about 6 to 7 months up there though, I did decide to come back to Canberra. I wanted to be at home. You know, I was about to turn 18. I wanted to be with my mom. I wanted to be with my sister and my dad. And, you know, my mom and dad had broken up while I was in Melbourne, which is a massive change for us. So I just wanted to be home. So I came back and I danced for the next few months at my old dance school at Kim Harvey School of Dance. And I did my solo seal there and went to Genet in London and performed there, which was really exciting. So I still got to do really cool things. I was feeling quite, not lost, that's the wrong word, but like I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I wanted to dance, but I didn't know if ballet was my thing, but I really wanted it to be my thing. We decided that I would get a one-way ticket to Munich and I would make my way backpacking around Europe, auditioning for different ballet companies around Europe. Small ones, big ones, go and do classes with them, enjoy the cities, get out and just live my life. So Dad booked me a one-way ticket to Munich. I packed my backpack. I set up my first few stops. I got a hostel card, a rail pass, and made some appointments with different ballet companies and off I went. Aged 18, I think it was the 6th of December, 2003, I got on a plane all by myself and went to Munich. And I had the best time. I backpacked from the 6th of December all the way through to Christmas Eve, all through Germany and Austria. And I had an awesome time. I did some dance classes with different companies. I auditioned. I met some lovely ladies and men across the way. And we had fun. We drank. I just was enjoying being there. Again, though, I suppose I left Australia a certain weight. I can't remember what that was. Maybe my early 50s, maybe 52 kilos. Feeling strong though. I felt so strong by that point. My boobs were probably just as big. They were still like a D cup, but I was feeling really strong and empowered. But with the touring around Europe myself as an 18-year-old and drinking and eating, you know, German Leverkusen and all these sorts of things, the weight slowly crept back on. And I was used to dancing all the time. And I suppose I went from dancing all the time to only doing a class here and there on my travels through Europe. So I traveled through Europe, ended up meeting some friends, family friends in Paris for Christmas and spent Christmas in Paris with those friends, which was really, really awesome. And then ended up spending New Year's Eve at the Australian Embassy in Paris with those friends. Ended up getting drunk with the ambassador's daughter. We found a bottle of vodka in her freezer. I'd never met her before. Next minute, we're throwing up all over the embassy. It was hilarious. They were like, who is this girl throwing up in our embassy? Anyway, we had an awesome time. And then I left them to continue backpacking around Europe. And I ended up going to Italy, Switzerland, back to Germany, and then eventually meeting my mom in Switzerland where my sister was doing the Prix de Lausanne. So I met her there. And that was when I first jumped on the scales and I was something like 58 kilos. And I was like, oh my God, like my jeans still fit me. How is this happening? And obviously my jeans at the time, you remember, like, you know, the early 2000s were stretchy. So they were stretching as I grew. And to be honest, it didn't really have a huge effect on me, but I thought it would affect my worth. And I didn't get up into any companies whilst I was traveling through Europe. I wasn't feeling as confident in my dancing. After I left mum in Switzerland, I ended up going to London and meeting my boyfriend at the time there. I was working and we were living together and I was dancing at Pineapple Studios and having such a great time doing other sorts of dance, like more jazz, contemporary, hip hop, that kind of thing. I was having an awesome time. I did some auditions and actually ended up getting a role in a musical, which was really fun. I ended up breaking up with that boyfriend after that, realizing, you know, I was young. I wanted freedom, especially living in London, and eventually meeting my ex-husband in a bar. I mean, there's some stories in between this, but you can read my book in the future for those stories, or we might touch on them at some other point. Anyway, I met my ex-husband there, which from day one was the most volatile relationship, but we fell in love. And within about a year, after some other small commercial jobs in dancing and modeling and things like that, we decided to move up to Leamington Spa to live with his family where I would teach ballet. And I suppose I gave up my career in dance for him. And in hindsight, look, in hindsight, I am pissed off I did that. And if my kids ever did that, I'd be really pissed off. But I never regret anything. I always say the one thing you regret, you would not be where you are now. So as much as in hindsight, I wouldn't have done that, with the knowledge I know now, I don't regret it because I wouldn't be here. After a year and a half there, he decided he wanted to come to Australia. He was South African living in England. His mum was in England. So I just did as I was told. Unfortunately, back in those days, I felt like I didn't really have a huge voice. I tried. And if I did, you know, all hell broke loose. This relationship was quite narcissistic. It was emotionally abusive and at times physically abusive. And I never said anything. I was quiet. I didn't want to look like a failure. I didn't want to look like a victim. I didn't want people to think badly of him, because if they thought badly of him and then we were in a good place, then they would think badly of someone that I actually loved, and I didn't want that. So I never said anything. I made excuses for him why he wouldn't come to birthday parties or come out with me. He was an alcoholic, so he would always be drinking. He could never just have one drink. And then when he got drunk, he would be physically abusive. Not hugely, but he would throw things at me. He would throw things in the house. He would push me on the bed, push me up against walls. He would punch things. We had multiple broken walls, doors, utensils, things in our house, and very emotionally abusive. You know, why am I so annoying? Why would people want to do that with you? You know, why are you doing this? No one wants you. Like that sort of emotional abuse, you know. I remember being in the park with our dogs one day and saying, can you just hold my hand? And he was like, why would I want to hold your hand? And I was like, because you're my partner and that's what we do. We ended up going on a massive holiday through Europe at one stage. And I remember saying to him on that trip, like, are you ever going to marry me? Because we've been together for about 7 years at that time. And he was like, sure, let's get married if that's what you want. And I remember thinking, oh, cool, this is the thing that's going to change everything. We'll get married and he'll change and we'll be happy and we'll live this life. So I ended up going to get and signing my own ring. Buying my own ring. That was the most unromantic proposal of my life. And about a year later, we got married in a beautiful space with all our friends and family, huge wedding. And I didn't feel a thing. I had no emotion. I remember looking at my bridesmaids and they were crying. And I was like, oh my God, they have no idea. No one had any idea what was going on behind closed doors. I would cry myself to sleep. The excuses I was making, the effort that it went to, just the heartache every single day. And no one had a clue. So that was in the January. Over the next 6 months, I just didn't feel it. And for once in my life, I just started being me around him and he didn't like it. And I was like, yeah, this is me though. I'm sick of being someone I'm not. I'm sick of pretending. When we got back to Australia, when I was 21 as well, what reared its head was my struggles with my self body image. And I thought that if I looked a certain way or I could control something, that it would make him love me more. So I went on this huge weight loss thing where I got down to about 47 kilos. I remember waking up and not having breakfast, having a cup of tea, and then having rock melon for lunch and being careful not to have too much and being so particular and loving that I was skinny and loving the attention I got because I was losing weight, and put lots of worth on what I looked like in the hope and the bid that he would like me more or love me more. But also I felt like at least I had control over something in my life. And if I could control my food and I control my exercise, because I would exercise to extremes to look a certain way, then at least I had control over something. Looking back, not eating and exercising too much, newsflash, doesn't actually make you look anyway except really skinny. I used to look at the girls in the gym and be like, look at their muscles, look at their arms, look at their abs, look at their legs. I want those. I know what I'm going to do. Not eat and train 3 times a day. That doesn't work, people. That doesn't work. Anyway, as in my 20s went on, as I said, we lived our life. I make excuses for him. We went on this holiday. My relationship with food and myself was not good. I was very good at putting on a show. I got my fashion degree and did all right with it. Didn't do great at it. Didn't love it. Wasn't something I loved to do. I just did it because I thought I should do something and get a degree in something because I had no idea what to do. I was teaching ballet and jazz at my old ballet school and working in a doctor's surgery. So I was literally working round the clock. Get up, go work at the receptionist at the gym, go to uni, come back, work at the doctor's surgery in the afternoon, and then go and teach ballet in the evening. So I was literally from 6 on the road till 9 p.m. at night. It was exhausting. When I was 24, I ended up stopping working at the gym once I'd finished my degree and taking on a role full-time at the doctor's surgery, where I ended up actually being practice manager after a little while. After a while, I didn't like the way that they were going. Their values and morals didn't sit right with me. And I felt I was getting a lot of stress from working there, huge stress. So I went on stress leave and ended up getting a job at Student Flights in the mall. And it looked cool. When we booked our holiday to Europe prior, the chick just looked like she'd had so much fun booking a holiday. Like, she got to book people's holidays. She looked fun. It looked exciting. And so I was like, I want to do that job. So I went and got a job at Student Flights, and this would set up for the next, 6-7 years of my life. So I went and worked at Student Flights and I hit the ground running. I was awesome at this job. I loved it. The people were fun. We were having fun, and I got to book holidays with people, and I ended up actually being the top novice worldwide in my first 6 months of being in that company, which was awesome. So not only was I having fun, I was earning a lot of money and I was having lots of fun with friends, and I was going to get on stage and get an award. So in the July, I've gone to Cancun with my new company and had the best time. As you can imagine, Cancun, we got drunk, there were parties, there were special acts, there were awards nights. It was just so much fun. And I'd gone with my brother. Now, whilst I was in Cancun, I did get some attention from another guy, and I hadn't got attention from guys in ages because I hadn't put myself in that situation. And he was just so lovely. Nothing happened, but he just treated me really nice, said nice things. And I remember thinking, this is really nice feeling, being told nice things, being told you're beautiful, being told you're funny, being told you're so lovely, being told you're smart, being told that, like, all these things. It didn't always necessarily have anything to do with my body or anything. It wasn't about ballet body. My worth wasn't on that. It was the fact that I was funny and people liked to be around me, and the attention was so beautiful. And I remember thinking, I'm going to break up with him. I can't be in this marriage. I cannot live my life like that. Like, look how much fun there is to be having in the world. I remember thinking, this is life. This is having fun. This is how people treat each other. And so I got back from that trip and I walked in and I remember saying to him, I'm leaving. And he was like, what? He just turned around and walked away. And I said, you can turn around and walk away this time, but I'm leaving. And I literally said it like that. I was like, I'm leaving. I'm finally leaving after all this time. And I grabbed my stuff and I had a couple of friends come and help me take my stuff to my dad's. And I left. I left everything there, to be honest. I packed a bag and left. And I felt liberated. For the first time ever, I felt liberated. And a team leader role had come up in Campbelltown in New South Wales, and I applied and I got the role. And so it was perfect timing. I left my husband and I was off to live my life the way I wanted to live. And it was great. It was great. I was in charge of a team. We did really well. I took them to Global Ball. Like, we qualified for Global Ball. We were the most improved team. I had lots of friends. I had lots of fun. And I felt more me. I felt less about the self-worth that my body had and more about me. And this is where the healing started. I started nourishing my body more. I started educating myself more. I started moving in a way that made me feel good. I started doing things that made me feel good because I was so tired of worrying about the way I looked. I started walking. I started running again. I would go to the gym and focus on form. I would nourish my body. I would educate myself. And I did happen to start dating another guy from another store near there, from Flight Center. And we fell in love as well. And fortunately or unfortunately, in hindsight as well, both of those men had very similar qualities. My ex-husband and him had very similar qualities. But I'm a Leo. Do you remember I said that? I'm a Leo and I attach myself to people and I'm a lover and a giver and I fall quickly because I am like that. And when I didn't know anybody else down there, this was, you know, someone I could attach myself to. And we fell in love and we had a lot of fun down there. He also didn't have a good relationship with alcohol and drugs either. So unfortunately, that wasn't great. And I'm easily influenced as well. So, you know, I would participate in stuff and, you know, all my own accord, never felt pressured, but I participate, but it wasn't really in line with what I was feeling. You know, I was like on this sort of journey of like, yes, I'm loving me feeling better and moving well, but then there's this element of like partying, which I'm not sure is sitting right with me, but I enjoyed it at the time. So after 2 years of living there, I then got promoted to area leader of a Victorian area, so down here in Melbourne. And it was a big move for both of us, but we both moved. And I think in hindsight again, I don't think he liked that. I don't think he liked the fact that I was now above him in the company, that I had, basically I was like, not his boss, but like we had different areas, but I was like that, you know, position above. And I am a forward thinker. I am always striving to do more. And if you follow me on my socials, you'll know this. You'll know that I'm always striving to do better. In all areas of my life, I think that everyone can always do better. Not from a huge pressure point of view. I don't think there should be pressure to always do the best, but I think there is something in always trying to improve yourself, whether that is in your physical health, your mental health, your job, your way of doing things. Like you should always be open to change. I think one thing the past generations have never done is be open to change. They're always so set in their ways. Like this is how it's done and this is how it's always going to be done and this is how it's always been done. So this is how we're going to do it. Whereas if I've learned something else, okay, let me experiment with that. Is that, how's that look? And I'm always up for growth and living more and learning more and having deep conversations. And I remember being in the bedroom one day with my boyfriend and he went, when are you going to stop? And I went, what do you mean? He goes, when are you going to stop? And I said, I don't understand what you mean. He's like, you're always go, go, go. There's always something happening. There's always, you're always trying to do something more or be better. You know, he's like, what's the point anyway? He's like, you're going to get fat anyway. Everyone gets fat at 50 and then what? Then you're old anyway. And I remember thinking, are you serious? Like you think 50 is like the limit and then what? You just freaking crawl into a hole and wait to die? And I remember thinking, nah, this isn't for me. Like I'm here to live. You know, it is a privilege to be here. You know, all the shit that I felt like I'd been through already, I was like, yep, I'm here to live. So that relationship ended eventually and I was single again and feeling good. I had people coming up to me and saying to me things like, you look so strong and lean and happy, but I see you having a glass of wine at events and I've seen you have an ice cream before. Like you can't have both. You can't drink wine and have ice cream and look lean and strong. And I was like, do people really believe this? Do people really believe it's one or the other? You either look lean and strong and you must be on a diet and you must be really clean, or you're living life and having wine and chocolates. Like, is there only two? Do people really think this? Do people think there's no balance in life? And I was feeling really good. I'd run my first half marathon. I was feeling strong and I was eating more than ever. Like if 18-year-old Danny had seen how much I was eating, she would have freaked the hell out, guys. Like freaked the fuck out. And I remember saying to myself, next time you go into a relationship, you need to be picky as hell. You need to make sure that that person is your person. I was 31 years old at this time, right? And I was like, I'm getting older. I was like, I want to have kids. You know, there was a time in my late 20s when I was still with my ex-husband that I was like, I don't think I want kids. I didn't really like kids. I'd see kids and be like, eh, who wants kids? Like they're annoying little fuckers. I don't want kids. You know, and I remember saying to mum, do you mind if I never have kids? I'm not sure I want them. And I remember her being like, if you don't want kids, you don't have to have kids. It's fine. But, you know, I was 31 now and I was like, you know, I think I do want kids. I think I want a little family, you know, just two. I'm one of like, well, I'm one of four, but like two of us grew up together close in age. And I was like, no, I think I do. And so I was really conscious that I wanted kids, but I also didn't want to just jump into a relationship with anyone. And I wanted to make sure my values and my morals were stuck. And I didn't want to say yes to anyone if something annoyed me. Because I remember my mom saying to me once, if it annoys you at the start, it's going to be 10 times more annoying in 5 years' time. And so I went on quite a few Tinder dates. So at this stage, Brooke was living with me and I remember sitting on the couch going through Tinder like this, you know, swiping, swiping, swiping. And every time I went on a date, there was something I didn't like. It could be someone's hair. It could have been their dick size. It could have been, I don't know, the fact that they maybe did drugs or drank too much, or I noticed a common, you know, factor. Maybe they, I don't know if whatever it was, you know, I was like, nah. I don't like you. And I remember them being like, what did I do? Like, what was it? And I couldn't tell them, like, I'm sorry, your dick was too small. Like, or sorry, your hair flew the wrong way. Or sorry, like, I just didn't like the way you said, because I was being picky, guys, like ultra picky, because I had been through enough bad relationships and I wasn't doing it again. So Chris then popped up on my Tinder and he had an English flag. That's it. And a picture of him with his top off. Now, if you've seen my husband, it's a pretty sight. So of course we connect, we swipe and match on Tinder and we start having a conversation and there's no cheesy lines. It's just banter, backwards and forwards banter. I'm like, oh, where are you from? And he's like, oh, I was born in Solihull, not Birmingham. And I was like, oh, I know Solihull. Like, I stayed in Solihull because when I went to the Genet in Birmingham, we stayed there. And I was like, that accent's not great though. Like, you're supposed to be like English. I had this London accent in my head and we just had really good banter. Really good conversation, back and forward, funny, so funny, and no cheesy lines. Like, I was waiting for the cheesy lines and they never came. And then he said, I'm going to take you for dinner. I'll pick you up. Where do you want to go? You book the restaurant, I'll pick you up. And I was the first person that was actually going to pick me up. And Chris and I will talk more about this on our episode, but picked me up. And I remember getting in the car and not only is he gorgeous, but he was so funny straight away, you know, straight into it, so funny. And we had the best night and I couldn't find anything wrong with him. And I was like, there's nothing wrong with him. He didn't drink. And I was like, this is fine. Like, why do I, like, this is a good thing. You know, he went to the gym all the time. He was fit. He, like, you know, his grandparents were staying with him at the time. He was a family man. I was like, this is good. And after a couple of dates, really early on, I remember saying to him, don't freak out, but I need to ask you a question because I don't want to fall in love with you if the answer to this question is no. And he's like, oh, go on. I remember saying, do you want kids? Because he's also 2 years younger than me. Remember, he was 29 years old at the time. And he's like, yeah, of course I want kids. And I was like, that's all I need to know. It's fine. I was like, I just need to have them by the time I'm 35. I'm 31 now. So you've got 4 years if we stay together, if this works. And he was like, not even put off by it. And it was really attractive. Anyway, so we started dating and it was beautiful. And within less than a year of being together, we conceived Harper. We had our first miscarriage first. So we, after Chris saying that he wanted kids, and again, we'll talk about this more on our podcast, Chris loves things happening now. He hates waiting for things. You know, he loves the chocolate at the checkout. That's him. The impulse buyer. He needs stuff now. Once we sort of were settled and we said the I love yous and everything, he was like, what did you say you want kids? I was like, oh, by the time of 35. He's like, oh, we can try next year if you want. And I was like, oh, okay. Thinking, oh, I'm awesome because I am getting older. And then by the October, he's like, let's just try now. And I was like, okay, let's just try now. So we tried. We got pregnant straight away off coming off the pill. I'd been on the pill for 17 years and we miscarried. And it was devastating. You know, we were so excited when we got pregnant. Chris had already gone out and bought some little Converse shoes and we lost that baby. But we were just so excited to try again. Like, I was like, yeah, we have to try straight away. And we were going to America. We booked our big trip to America and the middle coming back for my mum's 60th birthday, which I'll tell you more about in a second. And I knew exactly what day we had to have sex, like when I was going to ovulate. And, you know, we landed in LA and I was like, Chris, we have to have sex now. Like, I'm ovulating. And I literally pulled him to the bathroom. I think we just got off the plane. We're in the shower. I was like, let's have sex now. I made him have sex all through our trip, like every 2 days. And then on Christmas Day in New York in 2017, we found out we were pregnant with Harper. And it was just beautiful. And a really special way to find out that we were pregnant. And obviously it stuck and we have our beautiful little girl. And that year it was beautiful. And the second year of her life was also beautiful. You know, she started daycare, all those sorts of things. And then going back, just when I met Chris, I was still working for Escape Travel down here. So it's Flight Center Travel Group. But again, their values and morals weren't sitting right with me. I was getting told I had to act a certain way, say things a certain way. If I wanted to stay in the company and progress any further, I had to comply with the rules. And I'm not a rule complier. as you can tell. And so I was like, no, this isn't feeling right. So I ended up getting some long service leave paid out, leaving that job and having 3 months off and not sure what I wanted to do. This was before our trip, and ended up getting a job as a national sales manager for a homewares company, which I was starting in January. Now, of course, I didn't know I was pregnant when I applied for the job or had the interview, but then I got pregnant on the trip. And so to had the job and got back and sort of had to tell them in 12 weeks time, 12 weeks into the job, which they weren't happy about. But I had that job for 6 months and I hated it. It was horrible, to be honest. The work environment was horrible. I'd come from such a fun workspace. Even though the morals and values of the company I didn't agree with anymore, at least the company and people inside it were fun and we had fun. I hated this company. I thought, what else can I do with my life? And I thought, you know what? I'll go out on my own. I'll do my own travel agency. I loved selling travel. I was good at it and I can do it at home with my daughter. So I decided to open that. So while I was pregnant with Harper, I opened my own travel business and started doing that. And then on the flight on the way back from America, when we found out we were pregnant with Harper, I decided to write a blog. I was like, I'm going to write a blog. I want to start an Instagram page. Chris is like, okay, what's it going to be about? I was like, it's going to be about supporting women in their journey through life and battling mental and physical challenges of being a woman and the changes we go through. Because I was like, people seem to think you can't have it all. You can't be lean and strong and eat your chocolate and you have your wine. And I want to show people you can. And as I enter this pregnancy, there are going to be so many different things that come up and challenges in my body that I'm going to face. And then into parenthood, I want to be there. I want to help people through that and do it whilst I'm going through it. So people feel like, yes, actually I feel this. So I wrote my first blog, and then whilst we were in Bali, I set up my first website, thefigurelife.com, and the figure was born on March the 6th, 2018. And I just shared my life, and I had some PTSD when my boobs started getting big. I had massive PTSD. Like, I was in tears. I hated my boobs. I hated that they were so big because they'd gone small, guys. I turned 21 and my boobs went away. They went away and they're still away. And so I had huge PTSD, and I shared the ups and downs of pregnancy and having Harper. And then, yeah, started my business as she was born, and then realized that I was so interested in the nutrition and fitness side of it that I needed to expand my knowledge in this area, because if I was going to be talking about nutrition and understanding food and helping people in this way, I wanted to have more knowledge behind me. So I went and did a online nutrition coaching course when Harper was 4 months old, and I did that and I loved it, and I became a certified nutrition coach, and I then could start helping women. I wasn't sure how the business is going to come about. I was doing my travel thing. I didn't know, but I had it behind me and had that knowledge behind me, which is really cool. As we know, at the beginning of 2020, we then decided, let's have another baby. You know, Harper, like, we were thinking, do we just want one? But I was like, no, Harper's a really social girl. We went to the park, she was playing with other kids, and we're like, yeah, let's try for another baby. So I went off the pill, and I had a miscarriage on the pill because I changed over pills briefly at one stage a couple of months earlier. And so I was a bit sort of, you know, conscious that had just happened, but we were like, let's try again. And we didn't get pregnant, which is really odd because we got pregnant straight away with Harper and straight away with the one miscarriage as well. And we weren't getting pregnant, and it was really interesting. So we were going through those sort of infertility type issues through 2020. And then of course on March 15th, 2020, Dan Andrews, or Scott Morrison at the time, announced they were closing the borders, of course, for COVID. And within one day, I lost all my income from travel managers, all of it in one day, $35,000 worth of income in one day, and emails after emails asking me to cancel the trips. So I was about to not only lose $35,000, but I was about to do hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of work for absolutely no money while I canceled people's trips and get some abuse at the same time because I couldn't get money back quick enough because it wasn't in my control. So the borders closed. I remember mum being in town at the time, and I slumped in a heap, and I thought, how am I going to earn an income? This is my income. We had two car loans. We had a mortgage. I have an 18-month-old. Like, how are we going to eat? How am I going to pay the bills? How am I going to pay the insurance? And I was on the floor. And I remember thinking, well, we can't do much down here on the floor, so I'm going to have to do something. And I just employed Steph Gorton as a business coach a couple of weeks earlier. And it must have been fate. There must have been a reason. I was like, let's get the figure up and going. Like, let's get a business coach. There must be a reason. And, you know, that was the reason. I needed her because there was about to be a massive change in my life. And we discussed doing some sort of nutrition coaching for people, you know, reaching out and being like, if anyone wants me to just look over their nutrition for a couple of weeks and see where you can make some tweaks, I'm happy to do that. You know, I was charging $90 to check people's meal plans for like 2 weeks and then give them some feedback. So I was doing that already. And then as we went into lockdown, if I couldn't get to the gym or just wanted to get it done or half was home, I would do home workout anyway. And then Chris was the one that was like, why don't you go live on your Instagram and do a workout with everyone that's at home? And I had about 10,000 followers at the time. And I was like, that's a really good idea. Let's see who wants to join me live. And so many people around the world joined me, not just in Australia, around the world joined me for live workouts. And so the Figure Babes was born because I was doing my live workouts on Instagram. And Steph was like, this is a business idea. You can pay for this subscription. Get off doing it for free and create a platform. And so I moved it to Facebook and the Figure Babes was born. And I had loads of people sign up. I used to charge $8 a week. I did 4 live workouts a week at 9 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes Harper was there jumping along with me, and I got people moving in their house in the hardest time of their lives. Not only that, I then started doing private coaching. People were like, I don't want you to just look at my diary for 2 weeks. Like, can you help me for like 6, 12 weeks? I want coaching. So I started doing private coaching, and then I set up my first set of group coaching in about the August or September. So within six months of COVID, I had made $100,000. You know, I had turned over that much money from selling figure bands. I had my figure bands from coaching, from doing my live workout platform. And I was like, what the hell? What is going on? And I was loving it. I got to help people. I got to help people feel amazing when they were stuck at home feeling like crap. People were eating too much. They weren't moving their bodies. They had their kids at home. Couples that potentially were always away from each other were now stuck in houses together. People were cranky. People were grumpy. People weren't feeling good. They weren't confident. And I got to help them. And it was a really beautiful feeling. At the same time, I got to help my family. I got to pour some income back in. You know, we had to put our mortgage repayments on hold. We had to put our car repayments on hold. We had to sell one of our cars. I had to put my insurance on hold. Like, we couldn't afford that stuff if I was going to feed the family. And so it was really nice to be able to do both at the same time. And yeah, so then we were still having fertility troubles during the year. So, you know, while this was going on, it was a huge year. And so by the November, we decided to seek some help and see a fertility specialist. And I found out that, of course, Chris's sperm was perfect. Of course, but I had a severely low egg reserve, which for my age, and he said the likelihood of you conceiving naturally is pretty slim. Like, you've not got a huge amount of eggs. You'd have to really make sure you were having sex every single month at the same time, just in case that month you release an egg, but you won't be releasing eggs every month, which then started to make sense because my cycle was super short most months. And then the odd month I'd have a long cycle. And he's like, those longer cycles, that's when you're dropping an egg. But like, how am I supposed to know that? So we ended up doing something called ovulation induction to conceive our next baby. And as you guys probably know, we ended up having twins. So I burst into tears, yes, the day that we got told we're having twins. And the doctor's like, why are you crying? Are you happy? And I was like, no. He's like, I thought you wanted a baby. I'm like, one baby. I wanted one baby. You give me two babies. And I'm not a huge person, so I was really worried about how I was going to carry it. I was worried about my body changing because there's still that self-worth in my back of my head about my body. But also, I loved my body. It's strong. It's fit. It's carried a child. It's recovered. Like, you know, I wanted that as well. I wanted to still be able to be strong and fit. I wanted to train through my pregnancy as well. I trained all the way through Harper's pregnancy. And so we entered a time of pregnant with twins. Now we needed to get a new car and we needed to get a new house because we didn't have enough room. So we ended up putting our house on the market, selling our house, buying another house. We then went into a second lockdown in 2021 here in Melbourne, which meant my parents were unable to come down for the birth of the twins. So we were left with no family here to help us out with the birth of the twins, just some beautiful friends. So that was a bit difficult at the same time as well. And my parents didn't meet the twins for quite a few months after they were born. When I had the twins as well, I went in for a vaginal delivery. Beau's head was nice and snug down. He was literally about to pop out. I reckon if I'd sneezed, he would have come out. Harlow was transverse the whole time, but they said to me, you know, he's head down, she's like this, he should just slip out and then she should just sort of come down either head or feet first and we'd be able to get her out. Well, she didn't do that. My little Harlow, of course, he came out and then she slid this way and put her whole back and bum against my cervix. So I was no way she was coming out that way. So one vaginal delivery, one emergency cesarean, and she was in special care as well, straight to special care. She came out super small at 1.8 kilos, so just 4 pounds. So we had a couple of weeks stay in special care going through that, and then obviously altering to life with a three-year-old and newborn twins. So that was 2021. At the end of 2021, at Christmas time, when Chris and I first got together, we got two little cats, Posh and Bex. Yes, Chris is obsessed with David Beckham, and they were our babies before we had our human babies. And we loved them dearly, and they were the most beautiful cats. And on Christmas Day 2021, Poshy died, and Chris found her around the corner, and it was absolutely devastating, and we were devastated. So that was the December of 2021. then early 20 or mid 2022, Chris got the phone call that every person dreads, that his dad had suddenly passed away in England. It was horrendous. And it was just like sudden and it was horrible, especially after just losing our cat. So we found out that. And then a couple of weeks later, Chris was trying to organize to go back to England. And I was picking up Harper from daycare one day and I get this phone call from Chris. He's like, "Where are you?" I'm like, "Just across the bridge. What's wrong?" And he's like, "Don't freak out." Who says that to a mother? Don't freak out. But Bo was just in my arms and he has gone all floppy. Like, he's unresponsive and the ambulance are here because he's, and I was like, "What the fuck?" He'd been unsettled during the day, but I just thought he was just being unsettled. Like, he's a baby. He was 5 months old. And I got home to an ambulance here and Chris coming out with Bo and hustled us into an ambulance and off to the hospital we went. His first test came back negative for COVID. So we were really confused as to what was going on. And then the next day it came back positive, but he had a very different symptoms to most people with COVID. So most people's symptoms are respiratory, whereas Bo just would not stop throwing up. He could not stop throwing up. Everything that went into his mouth, he'd throw up and throw up. And he was so pale. So they ended up having to put a tube feed through his nose. And we were in there for 5 nights in an isolation ward because they put all COVID patients in isolation wards in a 3x4 meter room. And we weren't allowed to leave. And that's where we stayed for 5 nights until he was better, which was horrible. Chris had to stay home with the girls because he and Harper also tested positive for COVID. Pretty sure Harlow was positive as well, but we didn't test her. But he had to stay here with the girls. I never tested positive. I was negative the whole time, even though stuck in an isolation ward with COVID patients. I was negative the whole time. So that was horrible. It was really hard a couple of months. You know, our cat, Chris's dad, Bo in hospital. And we were like, this is it. We've got to have a good year now. Like 2022 is our year. And we had a really good year. We went to Fiji twice. The second time we went to Fiji was on a job, which was really cool. Yeah, we had a really awesome time. And at the end of 2022, we booked to go back to England for Christmas and take the twins back to see their English family. So that was really, really cool as well. So we got to go back to England. And then that was in December 2022. And then in January 2023, I was in Canberra with Harper and we were involved in a really severe car crash with my mum. And it was very close to not being okay. We pulled out onto a highway, so we got hit going 100 kilometers an hour and we were in a Tesla, thank goodness. So we went up into our sides and then came back down, which is great. Apparently that's what Teslas are designed to do, which is awesome because of the big battery in the bottom. They're not designed to roll, which is awesome. So anyway, it was really traumatic. Harper was in the car, so I was freaking out. We were all okay. Mum broke her nose. We had some scratches and bruises, but apart from that, we're okay, but it was very traumatic. And again, just not the greatest start to 2023 as well. In the November before, just before we went to England, Bexy went missing. So Chris and I had been away and Mum was looking after the kids and Mum was like, "Bexy's not here. He's not come back." And we've still not found him. So he went missing. So again, we've lost a cat. Now we've had a car accident. And then the next month I found out I was pregnant. Like, what the hell? What the hell? I can't get pregnant. I got told I can't get pregnant again. We don't want any more kids. We've got 3 kids. We good. And I got pregnant and we were both like, what the hell? We'd never completely wiped it off the table. Like, if it happened, it happened. But we were like, didn't think it was going to happen. And Chris kept talking about getting the snip and then he was booking it in and he didn't book it in. So I blame him. But we found out we were pregnant and I was like, oh, okay. And we finally got our heads around and we're like, fine, this is what you can do. This is great. And then a week later, I was sitting on the deck out there with Harper and the kids and Harper said, "Why is there blood on your panties?" And I lost the baby at 7 weeks. And it was really upsetting. You know, when you don't think you can get pregnant and then you get pregnant, that's massive. And then you lose it and it's an emotional roller coaster. And, you know, so I had this in my head, like, it's not meant to be, it's fine, it's not meant to be. Yeah, I thought, well, that was probably the only chance we had to get pregnant. So, you know, so again, within 3 months, a cat, car accident, miscarriage, you know, again, I was like, the start of the years for us are just really not great. But we had so much awesome stuff planned and last year, and then we got pregnant again. So I'd done a Great Ocean Road half marathon, smashed it, and then got pregnant. And we got to the 7 week scan and everything was fine. Heartbeat, and we were going to Europe when I was 9 weeks. So we got the scan, everything is fine. He's like, just come and see me when you get back. You'll be 14 weeks, you know, you'll just be past the 12 weeks mark. That's fine. We had the most beautiful time in Europe. We went to one of Chris's cousin's weddings in England. Then we went to Sicily, to the south of France. And one of my best friends joined us. And then all Chris's family came to Mallorca, and we had a wedding in Mallorca, and we had the best time. I just can't tell you how much fun we had. And I was pregnant as well, so everything was great. And then on the day we left for Manchester to come home, I had a little sore tummy. And I thought, I get quite a bit of anxiety before I fly. And I thought, I just need to poo or something. Got to the airport and I go to the toilet, there's a little blood. And I'm like, it's okay, it's just spotting. It's really spotty. It's not blood. It's fine. Like, try and stay positive. But you know us women, we know deep down, don't we, in our waters. It's like, something's wrong. And then about, I don't know how many hours into the flight, the blood got worse. And then by 8 hours into the flight, the cramps were bad. And I was like, I'm losing this baby. I'm 13 and a half weeks and I'm losing this baby and I don't know why. So we got to Singapore and I was met by the medical team and got taken to the medical unit at the airport and then straight into an ambulance to the hospital and so many drugs. Oh my God, I was in so much pain. And by the time I got to the obstetrician's office, I just said to her, can you just find out the sex? Please just find out the sex. And she said, I'm sorry, but it's too far down your canal. Like, you've literally, you're losing it now. It's not like it's starting. You're losing it. I can't tell. And so that was on the Thursday we arrived in Singapore. So I was taken to hospital. Chris bundled up all three kids, all our luggage, and went to a hotel. My mum jumped on a plane, flew to Singapore, arrived the next day. And that night at midnight, I finally passed our little baby. And I'll always remember that image of that baby. I couldn't see what it was. And the next day was my birthday. I woke up in Singapore hospital on my birthday, my 38th birthday, without my baby. And it was really traumatic. And last year I started saying, I can do hard things. You know, every time something shit happened, I was like, it's okay because you can do hard things. You've done loads of hard things before and you will do them again. You can do hard things. And I started actively doing hard things. I put myself into situations, and I have for a few years, where I actively do hard things. I want to run faster. I want to do further. I will take the hard road. I will always take the stairs. You know, if there's something harder to do, I will do it. Like, what's the hardest route I can take here? Because when you actively put yourself through situations that are hard, then when the real hard shit hits you, it's easier. And every hard thing that I've been through builds up strength and courage to get through the next thing. Because the next thing's coming. Whether you like it or not, something else shit is going to happen in your life. Hopefully not too many. Like, I'm hoping it calms down a bit now, but it sets you up for the next thing. And when you actively put yourself out there, when you actively do hard things, when hard things then come, you can deal with it better. You can cope with it better. You don't end up on a heap on the ground. It doesn't take you months to recover because you know how to handle it. You have those coping mechanisms and you know that you will get through it. Because you've been through things before. And yes, things are hard and they take an emotional toll and you have to sit with things and it's good to sit with them and acknowledge feelings and cry and let it out and talk about it. I'm a big believer in talking about it. But when we do that, we allow ourselves to open up. We allow ourselves to let in love and we allow ourselves to let in gratitude. And one of the strongest feelings I felt when I lost that baby in Singapore was the gratitude I had for my kids. You know, like, I was so grateful for those three little kids and life. So grateful for life. What a privilege to be here. And that's why I love doing what I do. And the reason I wanted to do a podcast was because I've had a bit of a colorful life. Things have happened and I've given you a snippet. There is so much more. There is so much more. But I wanted to do a podcast because I don't think people speak the truth enough. I think people hide behind validation and empathy. And I think they hide behind stories they like to tell each other to make themselves feel better. And I think we don't do things that are hard enough. We're all so scared of putting ourselves out there. We're so scared of what might happen. We stop doing things out of fear for what could go wrong. But what if that doesn't go wrong? What if on the other side of fear is growth and passion and life and living and experiences? And so these are all the things we're going to talk about. I'm going to give my opinion. I'm going to get people on to give their opinions. We're going to have debates. You know, I'm going to give some real hard truths because if you want to do anything in life or be anything in life, you can be whatever you want. You can do whatever you like, but you've got to have grit and you've got to face your fears and you've got to do things that are uncomfortable because in life, if you just sit back and do all the things that are comfortable and take it easy, You're not going anywhere. You're not going to experience anything. You are starving yourself of growth and fulfillment by not taking steps forward. And that's what we're going to talk about. So yeah, here we are. If you got this far, thanks for listening and keep listening. And please drop me a line below. Make sure you follow and recommend me if you loved hearing me. And I'd love to hear what topics you'd like me to talk on, whether it's parenting or life or mindset, fat loss. I'm going to debug some myths out there. We're going to myth bust. Is that the word? Debug some myths. Is that even right? We're going to bring up some controversial topics. We're going to talk about kids, parenting, eating, sleeping, exercise, fat loss, gimmicks, everything. Bring it on. I'm so excited to have you here. Thanks for having me. Until next time.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If something resonated with you, click follow so you don't miss the next episode and send me a DM on Instagram @thefigure_. It means the world to me to know that you're loving these episodes. If you're wanting more accountability and tools to implement changes in your life, head to the link in the show notes and book a free call with me. And if you want to get started right now, download our free resource, 5 Simple Things That Will Change Your Life. I can't wait to be back in your life next week. And trust me, you won't want to miss this episode.